This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hello, my name is Chris Hambling and this is the Back of the Nest season preview podcast. Recorded with less than a week to go until Palace kick off the season at home to Everton, we'll be taking a look at the key topics of discussion ahead of the start, with undoubtedly the lack of transfer activity taking centre stage. I'll introduce you to my panel right after this short break.
Back of the Nest Match Preview Podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, my panel today starts with Mr. Patrick O'Connor.
Hello.
Hello, Patrick. Good to speak to you. Been ages.
Yeah, good to speak to you too, my friend.
And we've also got the legendary Mr. Dio Canis.
Hello.
Hello. Good to hear from you. And you're obviously one of my favourites. You and I were having a little chat on Twitter yesterday after Harvey, Red and Blue site on Twitter, posted something mysterious in the skies of Croydon, didn't he?
Yeah, it was Santa.
Yeah.
I feel like he just messed up his calendar and you're just about early.
I did point out that Santa isn't usually on fire, but you were quite right to point out that the Croydon Santa would also.
Exactly.
He'd obviously be on fire continuously.
Exactly. There's different types of Santas. And if you don't know that by this age, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Thank you, Dior, for that important information for the listeners. So this is our final podcast of pre-season. From here on, we get into the usual programming. So you'll have a preview, the Love Sports Show, and a review show every single week. Very, very excited to be doing the show for the season ahead. Not quite so excited about the football, but let's talk about that in just a moment. If you haven't been listening in, we've been doing a podcast over the summer called The Palace Years, and we've covered every season from 2009-10 to last season. And very exciting they are too, so do give those a listen. Let us have your feedback if you so desire. So just to ease us in, gents, it's at the time of recording, it's roughly 24 hours since we lost 4-0 to Hertha Berlin in a friendly. We'll talk about the pre-season in general in just a moment. But, I mean, Patrick, how do you feel about that? I think perhaps, you know, we were talking earlier, perhaps a slightly misleading scoreline.
Yeah, I took the opportunity to hang out with some mates during the game. I didn't really feel the need to watch or listen to a preseason game, get all wound up about it. So I didn't actually watch it. I saw the highlights and I thought, you know, there were some good moments. I know we had a couple of opportunities. Dan hit the crossbar. Pentekis got an offside goal. And then at the end, it was, you know, the goals were kind of fluky. I know one took a deflection off of Martin Kelly. There was a penalty where Hennessy took down an attacker. I'm not that wound up about it. What I am concerned about is the lineup. Because as DR put out on Twitter, that's probably going to line up we're going to start with next week, being that Wolf isn't back training yet, and just how Hodgson, I'm thinking, I know Tompkins is still injured, and Sacco's injured or coming back from injury. So I'm a little concerned about the lineup as it would be against Everton, but I'm not concerned about the result, like I said, because I've always believed that preseason is more about fitness and that kind of stuff. The result doesn't really matter. But, I mean, people on Twitter and social media have been going absolutely crazy about the results, and I'm not really that bothered by it, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying throughout the summer that I don't really put any importance on the preseason result. We had a bit of a joke around the Bristol City game because we claimed that that one mattered because we happened to win exactly. It 5-0. But in general, it isn't about the results. But what I think perhaps everybody has a right to be concerned about, as you say, is the lineup, and more specifically, when the manager has gone on record as saying we've got real problems at the back. And again, at the time of recording, it was 2.5 weeks ago, I think he made that comment. And we're still there. We haven't done anything about it as yet. Now, we'll get into the transfers, and I've little doubt we will sign players. But, you know, we've got to be concerned because those players won't be coming in having trained with their teammates. So, as you rightly point out, and as Dio's rightly said, that's going to have to probably be the lineup when we go into the first game of the season. Dio, you were fascinated by the Hertha Berlin game.
Yeah, I managed to last until the first half. Then when the second half started, I was actually falling asleep and I had to go out. So I had to stop watching the game. I'm not even lying as well. I know some people might not actually believe me, but I had to stop watching the game after the second goal. But overall, if you're looking at pre-season, I understand that it's a fitness test. But I feel like starting from like the Bristol game, not that we won 5-0, but the fact that we're basically 2 weeks away from the season starting, you need to consider performances. You can't say that results don't matter. It does matter in a way due to like how the players are playing. Like we were raving on about Max Meyer against Bristol City, and part of the result was him playing fabulously. So I feel like it does matter to a certain extent, but I won't look into it too much. It's not the end of it that we lost 4-0 to Hertha Berlin. Wilf's not still back. And the only thing that I'm worried about and have been worried about ever since we sold Wan-Bissaka is our fullback situation, because going into next season, I just feel like teams are just going to abuse our fullbacks, and we haven't got the solid right-hand side, which was the case with Wan-Bissaka. And now it feels like more players need to focus defending, and it might take out of our game going forward in a way.
Well, I agree with that, because it's very easy to look at the way we played and defended against Hertha and look at centre-backs being caught out of position and not providing round amount of cover. But it was very noticeable that obviously Van Aanholt was missing on that left-hand side quite a lot because he was the only one providing width on the left. And Joel Ward, again, positionally, not the greatest, and you know, hasn't played on a regular basis for quite some time. So, you know, will be a little rusty. So I think it's the fullbacks that are creating probably the biggest weakness at the back, because then it exposes people like Kelly and Scott Dan for any lack of pace or inability to cover three or four players on their own, unfortunately. But yeah, again, you can get too much into the analysis of it. I mean, the pre-season has gone not great. Obviously, we started playing in the Urin Cup, and I deliberately pronounced it like that. Where we drew 1-1 with Luzern, winning that 6-5 on penalties. It was nice to see a Palace team smacking some penalties away, to be honest with you. Didn't miss any of them. Kirby scoring the winning penalty. We then lost 2-0 to Young Boys 4 days later to who won the tournament. There was then the 6-2 defeat against Barnet, which a lot of focus on, but realistically, it was essentially a reserve game. So I think people got a little excited about that one. A fairly drab 1-0 defeat to Nottingham Forest. And then the day after, the reserves lost to Bromley and the knives were out. That little bit of respite beating Bristol City 5-0, Townsend, Schlupp, Benteke, Mayer and Wickham scoring. Again, 3 days later from that, mostly reserve side drew 2-2 with AFC Wimbledon. Brandon Pieric, an exciting young prospect, got in both the goals in that game. Quite like the look of him. And then before that, and obviously we've just talked about the 4-0 defeat to Hertha, which has finished our pre-season programme. So anyway, let's get on to talking about the transfer situation, gentlemen, because, I mean, it is dominating once again, and for good reason. So I want to talk about the Palace approach to transfers, but we were talking pre-show, and there's lots of different tangents we can go on with this. So, but let's start with kind of some questions. And the big question is, what are we doing? Again, what are we doing? We've signed a third choice goalkeeper and Jordan Ayew, which, as Roy had pointed out, was one that we knew was going to happen because it was effectively done last year. We were just waiting for him to get a bit better from the AFCON. So every single transfer window, we seem to do really late business. So one of the reasons we've been told that that happens is because you have to wait for the kind of domino effect to transfers. We've also been told that you can potentially get better value by leaving it late. But I suppose if I start with you, Patrick, when does this potential better value get offset by the fact that you got players who are not spending any time with the squad before the season starts, joining late? You don't know if they're going to gel. And you look at last season with Max Meyer. He had no pre-season when he joined us because we left it as late as we did. He was on a free transfer. So are we really making things difficult for ourselves with this approach?
Very difficult. And I don't quite understand it. I'm not one for destroying the board, the investors, the manager, or Dougie, but it just seems that that doesn't work. And I kind of get that approach, but this is an example is this year. We sold Wan-Bissaka very early, very, very early in the window. It was imperative that we placed him, and we didn't. And the thing with having that much money and waiting this long is that the prices for our fullbacks are going to go up and up and up as we get closer to the minute, because everybody knows we have to replace Wan-Bissaka. We're not going to go into the season with just Joel Ward. That would be ridiculous. So the idea of waiting, though I understand it, because things kind of have to fall into place. A great example, like Harry Maguire signing by Man United, is going to cause a domino effect. Brighton will probably lose Dunk to Leicester, etc. I think another club signed this. Brighton actually signed the centre half.
Yeah, Webster from
exactly.
Bristol City.
So
yeah,
I get how that kind of works, but we saw Wan-Bissaka, is it a month ago? I don't. It was such a long time ago, and we've done nothing.
July 1st. So you're talking, yeah, just over
exactly.
A month.
And looking at our, you know, I don't want to jump ahead, but looking at our rumors in, is it Aguiar? Aguiar is the fullback we're looking at, right, to replace?
Yeah, Ruben right. Aguilar. Yeah, there's a couple of other rumors.
I don't know anything about, but he's a right back, so great. But I mean, so it just doesn't. And again, another thing was weird. I hate jumping all place, but with the Camarasa, for instance, I know that the rumor I heard was that Dougie was out there and he basically put an offer out there and it wasn't enough money and he had to go back to the board or back to Parish to find out if he could offer more money. Is that really how we're doing things? Because if that's how it's going to work, we're going to wait to the last minute and get whatever's left on the table. So I just think that the approach that we're taking in this case, in particular this season, is even worse than normal because, again, we had money from selling one of our best players. We know we had to replace him. We didn't do it. I think what we're doing this season is really, really poor.
I don't find it like a coincidence, the fact that there were rumours that the American owners want out, and there was that, I think, someone from Thailand who wanted in and China. I don't find a coincidence that we've left it late and we haven't really gone for anyone until this point, because I do genuinely feel like they do want out and it's somehow impacted our transfer policy. But it's not a good look for the club, because going into next season, you want to keep Wilf at the club, but you need to be ambitious as a club as well. And we're not really showing at this point, because Wilf can't play at a better stage than Crystal Palace. Like that is out there. You can't play for Europa League or Champions League club. I do believe that. But we need to show a bit of ambition as well, because yes, we want to keep Wilf, but it is also harsh on him if we're just staying as it is and not trying to move on as a club. So overall, this preseason, it hasn't been the greatest, but of course, we've still got until Thursday to do some business. So you know how Palace is. We might end up signing five players but before the actual deadline closes. So it's not the end of the world, but it is quite poor.
So you've touched on a few subjects. Now, we've got a new feature on the show this year, where we have a number you can add on WhatsApp and you can leave us voice messages. And just to give you the number ahead of playing a relevant message, it's 0203 575 1266. Just add that in your contacts and then you'll find us on WhatsApp. Chuck us a... I always feel like I'm about 100 years old when I start talking about anything like this. But yeah, chuck us a voice message. And you get an opportunity to have your voice on the show. So we're going to hear that clip now.
Hi, it's Prim here. So I'm happy with Aaron Wan-Bissaka going, and I want Zaha to go as well. if I was running a football club, that's what I would be doing. I think the reality is we're in the modern era. We could be out there. There's like 20 different names of amazing footballers that we could sign for like 10, 20 million that could come to our club because they're established in the Premier League. I think we shouldn't be independent. We shouldn't be dependent on Wilf. And I think that we should be able to make these big signings that across Europe for like 10, 20 million apiece. And we could use Zaha's money to do that. That's my opinion.
There we go. Thanks for that message, Prim. Much appreciated. And I think it's very brave to open with that you're happy that Wan-Bissaka went and you want Zaha to go as well. To address those two points, I don't think you should ever be happy that your best players are going or potentially going.
So one of the Prim's points was about selling Zaha and Wan-Bissaka and then using that money to buy players between 10 and 20 million. That idea sounds good. I'm going to throw some names out just randomly, attacking players mostly because of talking about replacing Zaha. And that was done in this current window. So Kovacic was signed by Chelsea for 24 million. Lookman went to RB Leipzig for 22.5 million. Ozil Perez went to Leicester for 30 million. Daniel James went to Man United for 15 million. Ollie McBurnie went to Sheffield United for 17.5 million. Pablo Fornals went to West Ham for 24 million, and Joseph Gray left Everton to go to PSG for 30 million. The only player, attacking player, that was less than 10 million was Jordan Ayew. Do you know who he went to?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, for 2.5 million. Now, not to make light of it, because I think the idea is interesting, but the problem is, honestly, is that you're not going to find 10 to 20 million players that can really help you. You're looking at 20 to 30 million. And if you were to do that, let's just say for the Wan-Bissaka money, you're going to get two players possibly, and none of them will probably be a right back. So, you know, I mean, if you get right back, maybe 10, 20, I don't know what they're going for, honestly. But so the point is, I just don't think that realistically we can afford to sell Wilf, because we've talked that a million times. We sell Wilf for 70 million. Can we really replace him? And I'm going to say no, because we might go out and spend 50 million, but that player is not going to give us what Wilf gave us. So I just think it's hard to replace players just by saying to go out and spend 10 to 20 million.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. And I think the transfer window definitely is one of those things that's a lot easier when you are sitting behind a computer screen. Sort of pointing at what other people are doing and all this kind of stuff. And we just, the truth of it is, and this is where we'll get into kind of the next bit really, which is how people are responding to it. The truth of it is, you don't know what's happening. You get stories in the press, link Palace with players or link Palace players with moves elsewhere, and you don't know the source of those stories and the motivation behind them. Just look at Wilf. There's, you know, been two clubs that have made statements, Napoli and Everton, to make it clear that stories in the press were absolutely false. You know, Everton was regarding a second bid, and Napoli was regarding them having the money to make a bid at all. And those stories will be in the... They won't... Everyone's like, oh, they're made up by Sky, so Sky can get money into Sky Bet and all this kind of stuff. That's not the reason. They're not... You know, the sources for journalists and... You know, any journalist will tell you this, that they might be aware that their source is giving them a story for the sake of giving them a story with other motivation, with ulterior motives behind it. But they're still being given that information by people from a position of knowledge and of interest, right? So what I'm really getting at is agents. If agents are looking to move a player on, there's lots of techniques they do that. They, you know, obviously they are allowed to speak to clubs directly. They're allowed to speak to other agents. They're allowed to speak to everybody, the players just aren't. But when a bid gets made, it's because a player has been sounded out by their agent about interest from another club. So to then completely write things off as utter rubbish, it's just a little bit naive. But then you have the second part of it, and I'll use the Alan St-Maximin discussion, because he's joined Newcastle for £20 million. Now, there's lots of reasons why I have a problem with people's reaction to that. But I saw people tweeting Steve Parish directly and calling him some unpleasant names because we hadn't made that signing. So two things. First of all, you don't know that we were interested in the first place. It was just something somebody wrote in a paper and you don't know the motivation behind that. But the other thing is, when have we ever played? We don't play with wingers under Roy Hodgson. Why are we going to spend £20 million on an out-and-out winger? You know, Wilfried Zaha plays up front. On the left-hand side, we play either Jeffrey Schlupp or we play Max Meyer as a wide central midfielder. On the right-hand side, we play Andros Townsend, who tucks in, runs all across the three, occasionally swaps with Zaha and occasionally goes up front. He's not an orthodox winger in our system. You all watch Palace, I hope. So why would we go out and sign an out-and-out winger? It's a problem. Look, the manager chooses to play that way. If we had a different manager, you know, it's exactly the sort of signing I'd like us to make. I'd love us to play with wingers because then we wouldn't rely on fullbacks overlapping and exposing our defence. You know, these are issues that I have with the team. But that's an example of something where people have got incredibly personal about the chairman or about Dougie Freeman and just without any real basis.
Yeah, Hambo, I know what you're saying with the abuse towards Steve Parish and Dougie Freeman. And if you actually look at them on Twitter, 99% of them are just kids. And it sounds ridiculous, but what can you do about it? They're just kids. And also, it happens every year. But I understand what you're saying with certain transfers, and it makes complete sense. And I don't think people realize it. The fact that there are people out there that go, like agents, for example, that go out there to news outlets and put stories out there just because they want to move for their player. And the same Maxim thing, for example, it seemed like a move like that because there was no true link to it. Like, it was like, yeah, we're rumored for like a couple of days. And after that, it just died out. So I don't know why people are going crazy about it. And what I want to say is that Dougie Freeman, I feel like there's a lot of pressure on him now because people are realizing that he's in a role where he controls the transfers. And if he doesn't bring in the right players before Thursday, then I won't be surprised if lots of people turn on to him rather than Steve Parish because he's the main culprit. So,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know Patrick will jump on this in a second, but I do want to make it pretty clear that what you've said there is absolutely bang on. It's his job. He's ultimately responsible. Now, we don't know the conditions he's working under. That's one thing I will say. We don't know the brief that he's been given exactly. But ultimately, yeah, the buck will stop with him if we don't bring in the right players and don't support the manager in the way that we intend to. And it's not the first transfer window. So don't get me wrong. I don't know either way whether or not Dougie Freeman is doing a good job. I don't have that insight. I don't have that knowledge. But my point kind of is that neither does anybody else who's abusing him. So I think there's certainly, we have every right to, as supporters, to ask questions, to be frustrated, to be annoyed. But do we have the right to personally insult these people for this? No, no, we absolutely don't. And it is boring. It's so boring.
So simply put, there obviously is an issue. So let's go back. You can go back 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. We do this every single window. So immediately people say it's got to be Steve Parish because Parish has a purse string. It's got to be his issue. I don't know if it's Parish. Then let's turn to the American owners. People are saying how they should just sell, get them out. They're useless. They spend money on American teams, not on the Palace team. But that's not true because the window when Allardyce was here, they were the one that said, you know what, we're going to open the purse string that we're able to buy Luka and Schlupp and PVA. And I believe he got Sacco on a permanent. So they have spent money. They're just not doing it now. Like as Dio said before, do they want to sell out? And that the reason why we're not buying, that could be it. Then there's the Dougie situation. You know, is Dougie making the right moves at the right times? Is he being hamstrung by Parish or by the manager? Is the manager asking for certain players that we just can't, that are unattainable? And then there's the FFP thing where, you know, I've got to believe that we have restrictions on salary. You know, we had to get rid of some players in the season. We don't want to bring in players again and start the whole cycle again. Do I mention before, we've got a decently old squad, let's say. Not all of them on big money, but a certain amount of them on big money, and we want to get a little bit younger. So there are so many factors that go into it. To me, just blame it on just Parish is the easy way out, or just Doug is the easy way out, or just the American owners is the easy way out. There's a combination. But I do agree with the people who say we have to address this. Something has to change because, again, if you go back in history, this has been the same thing every single summer window. It has to change.
Definitely. Look, it's going to cost us at some point as well. These constant late moves in the window. No one on this show is happy about it. Don't get me wrong.
Exactly.
What I will say as well is that there's often some really simplistic maths out there, and I don't mind to agree. I'm not criticizing people because I like the fact that they're trying to give value to opinions. They're not just shouting about stuff and getting angry. They're saying, okay, well, this is what annoys me. But for example, let's take Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Okay. The deal was £45 million up front by all accounts, with some add-ons that could take it past £55 million. But people are immediately going, okay, well, we've got that. It's like, well, have we got that? And the reason I say that is because a lot of deals, most deals, are structured in a way that you pay fees over a period of time. So we're still paying transfer fees out for people like Sacco and Benteke and Milivojevic. And, you know, these are transfer fees that will come out of our budget. And that's when what you're saying, Patrick, comes right into play. And it's the wage situation. So 80% of the turnover on wages, so 80% of the 140 odd million we make in a season is gone straight up just on wages. Then you have signing on fees for people with new contracts. Then you have signing on fees for people you sign on a free. And then you have loan fees for players. And so the idea that it's just, oh, player out, we've got that money, doesn't really pan out that way. No, I understand it. I understand why people love to stop at the end of one season and start at a new one. Go, right, well, whatever happened financially the season before and all the years before that, forget that. Let's start fresh on this season. So we're at zero. We've got 45 million quid in. Hooray! And it just doesn't work that way. And that's where people get themselves really wound up, because they ask that fatal question, in my view, in trying to understand football, and that is, where's all the money gone? And it's there. They publish accounts. You can see where the money's gone. And you can also see that any money that goes out to, I think there's only one director that gets paid, and I think that's Steve Parish, and he's invested that plus more back into the club. So you can see there's no one stripping any assets. No one's, you know, trying to cut corners or anything like that. Bottom line is, we're not a big enough club to constantly spend 30, 40 million pounds on single players. And cope. Now, you can argue that was a mistake in the past where we've gone out and spent a fortune on Sacco and Benteke, but nobody was complaining at the time we did that either. So it's all swings and roundabouts, really. But, you know, we could talk about that subject forever. But, DR, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, talking about wages, I do feel like we need to reconstruct, like, our whole wage bill kind of thing. In terms of Benteke, there's a big question. His contract is running out end of next season. So do we go and offer him the same amount? Do we lower the amount? Because I feel like this has been a lesson for us now. Like, let's not splash money on players just because they're big names. I feel like the club need to approach it more sensibly from now on, because our approach at the time, as you said, yeah, it does make sense why we got Sacco. And I'm not arguing with what Sacco's on, but for example, Connor Wickham, we offered him a new contract. I know we'll talk about him in a second and how he's rumoured to be out, but was that the most sensible idea? I'm not too sure, because we're spending 80% of our money that's coming in, and we're still giving players who hasn't played in 3 years new contracts. So stuff like that we need to look at.
But I will say, DR, in the Benteke case, and I've been saying it for a while, you have to look at the season he scored the 17 goals. Without those 17 goals, we get relegated. So I totally agree. Last year and the year before that, he just didn't do anything produce. And I don't think when they signed the contract, they said to themselves, okay, we're going to sign the contract. It'd be great 1 year and awful the next two. But I just think people have to look at it that, yes, he hasn't been great the last two seasons, but he was terrific that one season. It was everything we wanted and more, and he scored a ton of goals and he kept us up. And without him picking us up, where would we be now? So I understand what you're saying with Benteke's contract. But again, it wasn't like we raised it. And listen, these numbers might not be true, but I've heard that he's turned down bonus money he could have gotten of his contract in order for us not to like have even more contract and salary issues. So there are just things that go on as far as salary that we don't know about. And I think that to talk about, well, Benteke's salary is too high, I agree. And I don't think we're going to be signing, by the way. I think we're going to let him go at the end of the contract. But I think that sometimes you got to look at what happened because of the contract. Again, without that, we would have been in big trouble.
I think the Benteke one's interesting. Obviously, I always feel the need to point out in the 17 goal season, that's when we actually played with wingers and then crossed to him, you know, that kind of thing, which we haven't seen enough of in the two seasons subsequent to that. But yeah, that's not the whole story. Clearly, we've seen him miss a host of chances he should be putting away as well.
Absolutely.
Confidence is a terrible thing at times for footballers. But I think, and again, I heard that same rumour as you, Patrick, around him having a clause to be the highest right. owner and backing out of it. I don't know how true exactly, that is. It's just a rumor that went around. But you know, again, that if true, that shows that, you know, a degree of you know, a degree of respect to the football club that you really want to see in players, and I like that. But okay, we could, you know, we'll talk forever. And the bottom line is, we've got to sign some players. That there's no two ways about it. When you look at the bench that went out on against Hertha, I don't have any problem with youngsters being on it, but you know, I can understand Roy's concerns there, because going into a Premier League season, you can't be one centre back injury away from having to play a young lad who's got no experience, even really at first team level, let alone at Premier League level. You can't be in that position as a Premier League club that's been in the division for coming up to 7 years now. So definitely something concerning. But let's have a look at the rumours of players in, and we can talk about how people have reacted to them as well. So let's start with Gary Cahill. A strong rumour in the papers at the moment and going around the socials that Gary Cahill will be signing for us on a 2-year deal for $75,000 a week. It's in the paper. Whether that's true or not, you never know. Who put that in there? Is someone posturing? You know, who knows? But some really negative reaction to it, as well as some people who are kind of saying, well, look, you know, this guy's not long been in it. You know, it was not that long ago he was an England international. He's been playing for Chelsea for quite a considerable amount of time. Okay, coming towards the end of his career, but not that much older than some of the players we've got, and it comes with a huge pedigree. And more importantly, that kind of experience and that kind of know-how of playing in the Premier League for that long, it's got to be worth a deal in my view. And I think it would be a terrific signing, considering the injury issues that Tompkins has got. Seen rumours that he'll be out for another 3-4 months. And Sacco's coming back from another serious injury, so we don't know when we're going to see him as well. And Kelly and Dan haven't looked great pre-season, so it would be a good one for me.
I'm not too sure. You know what it is? It's not Gary Cahill himself. I feel like he could play a big role for us, but it's just the wages plus the age combination. We've already got an aging squad, and we're going to be paying $75,000 to a 33-year-old until he's 35. I'm not too sure about that, because when Tompkins and Saka comes back, I still put them ahead of Cahill, and it'll be potentially, basically, we're paying $75,000 for a backup centre back. And maybe if we sold Scott Dan or something, it might sound more appealing, but right now it doesn't. But I wouldn't be too upset, because I still feel like there's a player in him. It's just a wages part that confuses me a bit.
I've done a bit of a 180. On Twitter, I've actually panned the idea. But the more I think about it, and I didn't know that we just said, Hambo, about Tompkins being out possibly 3 to 4 months. I'm not worried about the wages, because, again, you mentioned before, Hambo, we pay wages, that's great. We're not paying a fee to him, you know, a transfer fee. Yeah, we end up paying him some kind of a fee, but that's fine. So that's fine. Watching Scott Dan yesterday, I'm a huge Scott Dan fan. I don't think the injury is the issue now. I think he just passed it. I really do. And I would be concerned going the season with him as one of our starting centre halves. And I've loved him for the time he's been here. So I think Cahill, though he hasn't played a lot for Chelsea last year, would be a good addition. Leadership, he played for Hodgson at England. Hodgson's apparently is a huge fan of his. His experience, you know, winning, you know, the Premier League, all that stuff would be really good for our squad. Maybe he can, you know, help someone like a Sam Woods come through, because I think we'd have to give him a chance at some point. I actually think the signing would be a decent one, even though initially I just thought it would be a bad one. But with Tompkins being out, I think that we need to address that. And I don't want to spend money and buy a championship centre half like other clubs have done in, you know, below us or around us and take that chance. I think I'd rather just go with Cahill and give him the money.
Yeah, I think the issue raised, you know, first by Dio and then by yourself, of the age and the contract is a valid one, considering the fact we've already got age and contract issues at the club. But I think you've also got to factor in what you said about Hodgson being a big fan. And if it's what the manager wants, you know, you've got to give him that as well. If he thinks it's a good deal, and if he thinks, you know, 2 years of him at the club will be valuable, whether it's as a, more often than not, as a backup, we don't know, but I wouldn't think so initially. But again, how fit he is, I don't know either. But we've got to get someone in at centre back. We're so light there, and getting someone with international experience and extensive Premier League experience to me is a no brainer. And let's not forget how long Damien Delaney played in the Premier League through sheer force of will. you know, you didn't. You know, at 33, we didn't chuck him on the scrap heap. He carried on for till 35, didn't he? 35, 36. So, and you would have to say, with all due respect to Damo, who's an absolute legend, you would have to say Gary Cahill was probably a superior player, wouldn't you? So, yeah, I'm all for that one. Next rumour I want to touch on is one that's been in the papers a lot. Ollie Watkins from Brentford. Interestingly, can play as a winger, could also play as a wide forward in a three. So as much as I've rubbished the fact of signing wingers, it's one that's on the radar. I'd be honest, I've not seen a huge amount of him. I've seen a few games, very direct, very pacey, like that about him. Interestingly, Brentford fans think he might struggle to make the step up, but it's a young player who can improve. I suppose an exciting one, perhaps, Dio?
Yeah, I thought that initially. Then after the Love Sports show, I was talking to a QPR fan, and he was like, you should have went for Neil Maupay, which Brighton have ended up going for. And he said that he doesn't see... it's like similar to Brentford fans. They don't see him performing at the Premier League level. And when I first heard the rumour, I was excited. But now I'm just looking at it and I'm a bit worried. But I mean, with perfect development, you never know what happens. I trust Roy Hodgson to develop him. But then again, it depends on how much money we're spending on him. Because the rumours were that we will offer Sirloaf. But of course, he's gone out now and he's away. So he can't be part of the deal. So how much money are we actually willing to offer Watkins?
Now, I mean, the rumours were we put in an 8 million bid and we're going to go higher as well. And they're looking for about 15. Again, it's big money. And any player from the Championship who's performed at a reasonable level seems to be incredibly high money. We've just got to get used to it, I guess. Also, realise I just said high money there, the Palace photographer. didn't mean nice to do one. That, but it was there. Anyway, you mentioned Neil Maupay. We're also linked with him. And it, as you say, it seems that he's quite likely to sign for Brighton, but £20 million. Now, he's a player that they absolutely love at Brentford and are kind of distraught about losing, and they do think he will make the step up. Let's hope he doesn't if it is Brighton he signs for. But again, that's a big risk, spending £20 million, Patrick, on a player who's done it at Championship level. You know, we've seen Bamford do it at Championship level, for God's sake. So, and we know it's a big step up. We've seen Gale, who's a player who seems to be between Championship and Premier League standard. Big risk.
Yeah, you nailed it. Bamford and Gale had a better pedigree than Maupay, and neither one, unfortunately, well, don't care about Bamford, but Gale unfortunately could make the step up. So I'm not sure it's worth the 20 million. Let Brighton spend on him and have him, you know, burn there and not do well. But the truth is, that's what we have to start shopping now, unfortunately. If we want to get players, you know, wide players, forward players, the Championship wouldn't be a bad idea. I just think perhaps Brentford wouldn't be the best place to look. I'd look at the team that did a little better, like some of the Leeds players, possibly. Not that they're necessarily available, but I'm just saying that you want to go for teams that or players that have done that really, you know, set the world on fire. But again, there's no guarantee, because I'm pretty sure that Bamford was the player of the year in the Championship at least one or two seasons, and look at how he did in the Premier League. So it's difficult. It really is. I mean, it's easy to just throw names out, but it's difficult to find these players. I'd like to talk a little bit about the next one, Fedor Chalov, the Russian.
Yeah.
Only because the fact that I'd never heard of him, I'm not going to lie to you. But just seeing, I went on YouTube right after and did a little research on him, and he looks like a decent player. I mean, the league isn't the best. He's got 20-plus goals in that league, the Russian Premier League. But It just, you know, Twitter, social media is a funny thing. At one point, you know, we had offered X amount and the club turned it down, and then he was going to come and then he wasn't, and Dougie was over there and then Dougie wasn't. So, and now apparently the deal's fallen through, but that's the kind of deal. But the reason I'd be a little bit worried about that is as we just mentioned, it's Alexander Sorloth. I mean, we've tried this already, going for a foreign striker who we thought had some pedigree, and it didn't work out. Now, it seems to me this player is a little bit younger than Sorloth, puts up about a little bit more and has a little more quality. But you know, it's exciting because of his, you know, the Russian thing. But I just be a little bit worried again. Palace just have not had. And if you guys go back to when Jordan owned the team, we bought a guy from what's the guy's name? We bought a striker. Oh, and he didn't.
I'm just trying to think. We bought. There was a Hungarian guy. Yeah. There was.
Yes. Sandor Torghelli. He's like, that didn't work out at all. So we have a little bit of a history of buying these Eastern European strikers. They sound good on paper. They have great credentials. They suddenly get to Selhurst Park. you know, can you do it on a cold Wednesday at Sellers Park? No, you can't, or Tuesday or Monday or even a Saturday. So, you know, I think that, you know, we're going to have to get a striker of some kind or a forward player, but that Chalov player does sound exotic. Let's hope that if it does happen, that he's a good player. He does a business for us.
I'll be real. I'll be honest. I watch highlights as you did, and I do not want us to sign him. I just
don't. You do or do not?
No, I don't. I really don't. Like, I've seen, like, in the highlights, I watch him miss so many times. And if that's someone's highlights, I know it's an honest highlight, but it didn't look encouraging. Like, that's how I saw it. I don't know. Maybe he could come and score 15 goals in the Premier League, but the way that we've moved with transfers, Yak, Serloff, players from abroad, I'm not hopeful, I'll be honest.
So, question. Is he better than your friend at Everton?
My friend?
That was the Turkish player under 4. Is he better, in your opinion?
No. Okay. I think Tosin is, if you put the ball in front of him, in front of goal, he'll score goals.
So can I, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. there's professional footballers that can't. We're talking about Ben Ticker. You have
to. I agree. I'm just going to, just a couple of things on that. First of all, Patrick, have you emailed the club about this? Because we're approaching deadline day, and I think perhaps there's a move.
Probably will when I get off this call. Yeah. I certainly will.
For me, it's.
And then I'll tweet them also.
For me, it's a pretty simple one. No, we don't know enough about him to be able to judge fully. I do try my very best in all circumstances to judge a player in a Palace shirt only and not to think too much about what's gone before and sometimes what goes on after. But obviously you are trying to make a judgment based on, you know, YouTube clips and all that kind of stuff. The couple of things I liked about him, first one was the goal he scored against Real Madrid. I really liked that. Excellent finish and very cool and calm in front of goal. And the second thing I liked is he had pace. And I don't think we've had enough pace in a central position, and I think that's obviously why Zaha's ended up playing up top. You just need that. You need someone who's going to stretch the game, and if you're trying to clear your line, someone who can run the channels, all that sort of stuff. So, looking at the style of player is, I'm relatively keen, but I don't know enough to really justify that. We mentioned Ruben Aguilar, who's a right back player from Montpellier, who's been strongly linked in the press. Again, not one I've seen play. I don't think at all. And I've not even watched any highlights as yet. But if he plays right back, and
I got two legs. Yep,
I've got two legs.
double cross every once in a while.
Exactly right. Next one I want to talk about, and we will move on from potential rumored signings. But obviously, I did say it was going to dominate this show. James McCarthy is one that we've been strongly linked with. Obviously, not played an awful lot of football over the last couple of years, mainly due to quite a serious injury. He did break his leg, I think, but. Played with James McArthur at Hamilton and I think at Wigan as well, if I'm right in saying that. Another one with strong Premier League experience. But the reaction to it, again, was people saying, why are we bothering signing a central midfielder? We don't need a central midfielder. We do. We do need central midfielders. Mm. That's all I've really got to say on that. But McCarthy... To me, it's another risk signing, but at the same time, you're balancing out the fitness risk with a huge amount of experience and proven quality at Premier League level. And if he's still that same player, which, again, I don't want to write off a broken leg as nothing, but it's very different to having, you know, a serious knee injury or, you know, serious ankle ligament damage or an Achilles injury or something like that. You know, if it's a straight break and it's just healing and he's just not found his way back into the side, then... You know, that's still a very, very good player there.
I feel like the injury part is a bit concerning. I feel like I'm just looking at season by season how many games he's played. And I think the most he's played in recent years is the 2015-16 season, which was 29 Premier League games. And, well, in total, he played 37 games. So that's a bit worrying. It's been a while, hasn't it? Like 15, 16.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, that's exactly the concern. And, you know, we've seen it with Soiree and Wickham at our own club.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the constant injuries when you come back from a long-term injury really do, you know, stretch that period of being out in beyond sort of reasonable levels. Patrick?
Yeah, interesting. McCarthy and McArthur, they are very, very similar. You mentioned them being at Hamilton together, which they were. They were both on the Wigan side, by the way, that won the FA Cup against Man City. Both internationals, one for Republic of Ireland, which is what McCarthy is, and Jane McCarthy is a Scottish international. They're, and they're 3-year difference. The one thing I would say, I think that technically, I would say McCarthy's technically a little bit better and scores more goals. But the funny thing is, they really are very, very similar. It's like a 3-year difference in them. So I think we might be getting, you know, I'm not, I don't, can't speak for the club, but I think we might be getting a younger version of James McCarthy. I'm serious. That's what they're looking at.
Yeah, they've got the same name.
I mean, it's really, honestly, if they're in the same lineup, you're going to be saying McCarthy, McArthur all the time. You don't know which one is which. So,
yeah, I mean, look, if you want to play, replace James McArthur, who better than James McCarthy? It's the easiest transition. And and we'll help Roy out as well, wouldn't it? So, no, look, I'm not against that one. Again, I don't really get the vitriol from it. I get the concern, but I don't get why it makes people angry. And finally, Victor Camarasa. Strongly linked, as you mentioned, Patrick, earlier on, initially linked as a loan deal where we were going to pay a small amount of money up front and a sort of fee to sign later on. That was then rejected, and apparently we were looking to pay them a flat fee up front. And then the most recent thing I saw was that we'd gone back in with a larger upfront fee for the loan and an agreement to sign later on as well. A lot of people questioning why that would be. There's lots of reasons why that would be. It's mainly about cash flow, usually. Small outlay this year, bigger outlay next year gives you more flexibility in this window, for example. But as a player, one who did very well at Cardiff, came with a very good reputation from Neil Warnock, by all accounts, and a very, very talented player, and one who can potentially sort of take on the Kabai role or play further forward. So it's one I'm quite excited about if we make it happen.
Yeah, I'm all for this one. I'm a Warnock fan, and Warnock gave him a ringing endorsement. I know last year he actually would always say that Camarasa was the most important player in their side. And if you watched last season, he scored like 4 or 5 goals. And I think one was against West Ham, Tottenham and Chelsea. I remember, and he scored against Man United. He scores big goals. And you're absolutely right, Chris. He would very much replace Kabai, younger, obviously, better legs, etc. Good engine, gets box to box. I'd be all for this signing. I think this would be a really exciting signing, and I think his transition would be quicker because of the fact he's played in Premier League last year, unlike Maya, who didn't get that chance. So I think if we brought him in, wouldn't have that long transition. It's a matter of where and who he plays for, because looking at the lineup now, you've got Zaha, Maya, possibly Schlupp, McArthur as 4 of those, attacking / midfield players. Now, where does he fit in? I know where I'd put him. I'd put him in for Schlupp, obviously, but that's nothing against Schlupp. I just think he'd be a better version, a better player. He drives the ball forward. But I would be all for this Camarasa. So I really hope. And I think if that gets this deal done, it really would quite a lot of people. I really hope this gets done.
I'm for it as well, but I feel like we're forgetting a certain player that plays for us, Cheku Kouyaté. He's been gone just like Wilf,
you're right,
due to AFCONs. And we're talking about engine, we're talking about midfield. He's that box-to-box player. And last season, he suffered an injury which kind of disrupted the season, and he sat out for a bit. But I'm looking forward to a full-fit Cheku Kouyaté next season, and we haven't seen him in pre-season. So I feel like he will be a massive addition when he comes back as well, because he looked... What my initial perception of him was that he's a good defender, but he doesn't offer much going forward. But last season, he just dashed all that away because he was brilliant going forward. He's strong, he's fast. So, there's another player that's coming in, Kouyaté.
Yeah, I just get the feeling that Roy's not sure about him. And I might be wrong there, but that's just the feeling I get. And I base that on the fact that even when he played really well, he kept finding himself being out of the team the next week. I'm trying to remember the game he played absolutely superbly, basically won us.
Isn't that the same with Max, though? But I know Max is a bit different.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, again, his was potentially more of a fitness and strength kind of thing. I think they were trying to ease him in, but I think Max will play more this season. At least I hope he will. But you might be right. Again, it might be one of those things where it's just a feeling. I'm not going to sort of elaborate too much more on that. I just felt that the evidence was there that Roy, for whatever reason, last season didn't trust him on a regular basis. And I don't really know why that was.
Yeah, A couple of things. One, squad depth. I think Camarasa adds that. Pushing guys to for their spots, I think, is a brilliant thing. Second, with Kiate, I don't know if it was true. Maybe somebody just made it up. But I heard that, you know, with our centre-half issue, that Kiate, if you guys watched the AFCON, he actually plays centre-half for the AFCON, that were we willing to try him back there. So that's another thing that you could think about with the injuries we have back there. When he comes back, he might be, you know, playing that there. But again, I remember he got hurt in the semi-final, maybe the final. So I'm not sure if he's even going to be fit anytime soon, which is unfortunate. But I'm a big fan of his too, Diarra, just like you are.
Okay. Well, look, we'll leave it there. Obviously, there are rumours that that Connor Wickham might be sold, and he's been linked with Bristol City, Reading and Stoke. If that does happen, I mean, look, people, funny, people are the same people that are angry we signed, got him a new one-year contract, to the same people angry that we're thinking of selling him. But the two things kind of answer themselves, which is, if we don't get another striker in, we won't sell Connor Wickham. I'll tell you that much. But if we do and we sell Connor Wickham, it'll be at a value that we got because we signed him on a one-year contract. But I don't know. Part of me thinks I'm a big fan of Connor Wickham, and I really still have this hope that he will stay fit, play games and be the striker I thought he was going to be. But I think he's had such a long time out, and whether or not it'll ever happen for him at Palace on a regular basis, I'm starting to lose a bit of faith in that. I think that's fair to say. And obviously the other big rumour out, we've talked about Wilf already, but this next section of the show, we're going to talk a bit more about Wilf. Now, we've covered a fair bit already, so we won't go on for too long, but I want to make a little bit of point. I want to talk about a little bit about realism around Wilfred Zaha, if I may. And I hope people don't think I'm being a bit too preachy with this, but there's a lot of people who are stating he doesn't want to leave Palace. He's never said he wants to leave Palace. He wants to stay, all this kind of stuff. And be real, he does clearly. There are actual quotes from him stating that he would like to play Champions League football. Now, that's not him asking Palace for a transfer. That's him talking about what his ambitions are. And you can be damn sure that all of the stuff over the last three seasons have been his agent trying to get him that move, trying to get him that big move. Now, he's not going to chuck his Crystal Palace career down the drain and be disrespectful to the club or anything like that. And I think people are mistaking that for a desire from Wilfred Zaha to stay at Crystal Palace. I think he won't be unhappy if he ends up staying at Palace, which I think he probably will, given how late in the window we are. But it will be because nobody was prepared to pay the asking price. It won't be because it was never going to happen in the first place. It's pretty clear that there were some really strong desires from Arsenal and from Everton to sign him. And you can be pretty sure that the Arsenal move, at the very least, if not both, appealed to him in some way. Because he doesn't want to spend the rest of his career at Palace fighting relegation. And if you're in his shoes right now and you're watching how Palace are doing in the transfer window and you're watching the level of ambition that we're showing, and I'm not necessarily criticising the club for that, but I'm just saying, look at it from a perspective point of view. This is a player who lots of neutrals will say is the best player outside of the top six. There are lots of people in football who say he is up there with some of the best players around. But he's never going to get that level of respect and admiration that perhaps his career deserves at Crystal Palace. And we have to accept that. We have to be realistic. We've done an awful lot for him as a player. But at the same time, you know, just you've got to be realistic about it. I think the worst thing that happened for him this summer in his ambitions was the fact that we sold Wan-Bissaka first, I think.
Otherwise, yeah, I agree. I feel like the Wan-Bissaka situation kind of made him think about his own place at Palace. It's like he wants to go out there and try again, because of course it didn't work out at Man United. But talking about Arsenal, personally, I thought if Arsenal did pay up and Wilf did move, that move would make a lot of sense, in the fact that he still stays in London. He's going to, I know they're not in the Champions League, but they've got a very good squad and they're still in the Europa League, so he'd be playing in European competition. But also, you have to consider the fact that, yes, Wilf has done a lot for us and I love him to bits, but it's a business. If we sell Wilf for, let's say, 60 million, which might sound a bit more appropriate and more clubs will come for him like that, then yeah, like he'll move on, but the chances of us getting relegated increases as well, and we can't deny that. And if we get relegated, the financial circumstances, it'd be worse than 60 million. I know that for sure. So we have to think about it in a business way. Yeah, like, yes, Wilf does deserve to move on, but unless a club pays the valuation, which I think is around 70 to 80 million because he's worth that much to us, then we have to hold on to him because he signed a new contract. And as harsh as that might sound, that, you know, he's the one that agreed on it for another 5 years. So it's a business, unfortunately.
No, you're absolutely right. He's been well rewarded contract-wise. He chose to sign it. And, you know, whether or not he was given any kind of guarantees or gentleman's agreement that has been suggested that he could leave the club, it would still be on the, you know, on the understanding that someone was going to pay a reasonable sum of money for him. And if you look at the sums of money they're being spent on players who, you know, we all know how good Wilf is. We know who he compares to. And just because other clubs or other fans might not see it the same way, as you say, Dio, it's about what he's worth to us, about what happens if he leaves, how do we even go about trying to replace him. It's the economics of it are very difficult. But with every year that passes, it will be more likely that he leaves for a lower value anyway. I think perhaps this summer was the highest his value would be. Personally, I think, my gut feeling is we'll lose him January or next summer, more likely probably next summer, I think, if he doesn't go in this window. But my question, Patrick, to you is, by taking the approach we've taken and sort of holding out for this transfer fee that he's worth to us, have we taken a risk here that he might be actually affected by that? He might be upset that we potentially could be argued that we blocked his move.
I think that depends on the relationship he has with both Parrish and with the manager. What I've liked is that you haven't heard anything from Wilf really since he's come back. I mean, he's put out some interesting tweets, Instagram posts and Facebook stuff, but nothing, you know, anti-Palace, pro-Palace, just regular Wilf stuff. So I think that the issue is going to be, I guess, tomorrow he reports back and, you know, we're bound to hear things tomorrow about, you know, how things are going with him returning. I'm sure there'll be some kind of thing on cpfc.co.uk, the, you know, Palace TV site with Wilf coming back and stuff like that. But are we taking a risk? I don't think so. Like I said, I think his relationship with Parrish is pretty good. I think the Parrish has always looked out for him. Like you guys mentioned, the contracts he's taken care of financially. He's been very loyal to us also, again, like I said, but it all comes down to that evaluation you guys talked about. If we don't get what we think he's worth, and he's worth a lot more than other people think he's worth to us, we can't sell him, and I do feel badly that way. But I'm like you, because I think January, but more likely next summer, he's definitely off. I just don't think I don't think Parrish is stupid enough to sell Wan-Bissaka and Zaha in the same window, for so many reasons. One being the vitriol and the pushback from the fans, because like look what's happened already with we haven't replaced Wan-Bissaka yet. So imagine trying to replace Wilf. I mean, it would have been a disaster. So from that standpoint, I think he'll come back. He may not be, you know, ecstatic, but I think he'd be okay, at least for the beginning of the season. And then when January comes around, if we're struggling again and he decides he wants to leave, we'll get what we can get for him and he'll move on.
Another thing to consider is that his value of 80 million, I feel like this is his peak. He's 20, he's going to turn 27 next season. And I reckon if he continues performing as he is, I reckon there's a season or two left of that valuation, then after that it will slightly decrease by the year. So the club have to make a decision by that as well. It's the fact that, do we want to just cash in, do we want to go and just get all the money now, or do we want to wait out and get a little bit less in the future and Zaha stays with us? Because that's an important factor to consider.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we'll move on from talking about Wilf. Imagine we'll revisit that a few times throughout the course of the season. But it's also looking ahead to the new season. Let's talk a little bit about Roy Hodgson. I think it's fair to say in his interviews, and he didn't even do an interview after the Berlin game, that he's not been too happy about the transfer situation. Do we think there's a danger he could walk? And would you blame him if he did, Patrick?
I don't think there's any chance he'd walk. We saw it with Pulis, but that was purely financial. No one else has really walked away. Dougie walked away way back when financially. That's not even Roy Hodgson's. That's not his style. I mean, for my criticisms of the man, he's a very classy person. He is he's a South London person, born and raised in Croydon. I can't see him walking out in the club and leaving us in the lurch. It wouldn't make him look good. Not that he, you know, should care. At this point in his career, he's done a wonderful career as a manager, despite my, you know, issues with him. I don't see him walking. I it's a great point about the interview yesterday. They stuck PV out in front of the media yesterday after that match because no one else wanted to talk about that disaster yesterday. But what was he going to say? He probably with the same thing he said before about, you know, Dougie and Steve are working on transfers in the background. I've identified X, Y, and Z. But I just honestly...
He calls him Doug. I like that.
That is correct.
Doug Freeman.
Yeah, Doug, Steve. But yeah, I would be so shocked for him to walk out. The thing is, it's not as untenable. Like, had they saw Wan-Bissaka and Wilf, I would say, and then not replace him, I'd be like, you know, what's going on? We've done the typical Palace thing. We just haven't signed anybody. We did the same thing last summer. I mean, I can't see him walking out. I mean, I'd be more shocked than anything that's happened past Manchester in a long time if he was to walk out. I really would be.
I agree with Patrick. I don't think he'll walk out, but he is clearly frustrated. The fact that he's come up publicly in pre-season after the Bristol game, for example, saying that we need to sign players. I thought we were on the same page with Doug Friedman and Steve Parrish. And the fact that he didn't go for an interview after the game yesterday, it shows that there's frustrations there. And it's the third time I'm saying this, but lots of pressure on the board. Lots of pressure because you want to send a good message out. And like when Roy does leave, you want to say to managers, look, we backed him, like come here, we'll back you as well. You want to send that message. And right now you're not really showing it. So it's a massive couple of days from the board in terms of that. But yeah, I don't think he'll walk out. He's not that type of guy. Maybe at the end of the season, I could see him leaving. I think the chances of that is very high, like 70%, him not signing a new contract.
So look, I'll go on, Patrick.
Yeah, anybody else think that should he walk out, which I don't think has any chance that Dougie's going to step right in anyway? I mean, that's what I'm at this point. I just
lots of people say that, but I can't see it anymore. I think he's probably much happier as a director of football.
You never know.
I think
is that a spotlight, which is good. I mean, don't need a spotlight during transfer time. So you're right about that. I just think that only because I'm saying that, Chris, only because I can't think of a ready-made replacement that we have, because we don't have a strong assistant manager. You know, in the time that Keith Finland did it for a couple of games here and there. I mean, Reddington wouldn't take over. Hodgson's right-hand man would walk with him. That always happens. So now I'm just saying, just because I've heard it and thought about it, that it just seems to me that Dougie would take over for a season. And because we have no one, I mean, I'm with Dio. I think he probably leaves at the end of this season and we hopefully set someone up for next year.
Yeah, that, I mean, there must be some succession planning going on for sure. You know, Roy's not going to go on forever as much as, you know, he might try, but you just never know. But, you know, things aren't really that permanent in football. I do want to mention that I saw comments from Ray Lewington. I think it was in relation to the Hertha game, but I don't know if it was directly afterwards or it was a comment from a previous interview or something like that in relation to what we've talked about, which was how we find it much, much harder to play at home than away from home because we're naturally a counter-attacking side, particularly with Wilf in the team, and that we sort of struggle to break teams down. But he also said we have to do something about it. So my question really, going back to the last season and the struggles that we had and looking forward into this season, are there signs there that Roy will or can or will change anything? And again, I point to the Hertha game where it was the same old situation where you had lots of, because of our focus and our fascination on this recovery shape, it seems very, very difficult for us at home to even do a counter-attack type break if we're under pressure, and certainly seems to make it impossible for us to have enough bodies around to actually break teams down. And that's what concerns me going into the year ahead.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. at participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Like, when I saw that, when I was reading that, I actually started laughing. I was like, wait, you do know what's wrong? Then why not make some changes? And it seems like, from what we've seen in pre-season, I know it's a fitness test, but in tactical point, it's like, we're kind of doing the same thing as last season, so it doesn't seem like there's going to be any changes, which is so confusing. I really don't understand it. He said the exact things. It's like, oppositions come to set a spark, they play differently, that's why we play better away from home. It's like, yeah, they do, and for the love of God, change our tactics so we can actually attack and play some football at home. But I just don't think it's going to happen because there's been no signs of it. I guess we have to wait till next week against Everton. It'll be one game, but it'll be a proper competitive game. Then we'll see. But I'm not really hopeful. He did say the right things, but I doubt Roy changes it.
Interesting, though, because one of our better results last year was against Leicester away. And how did we win that match? Could we counterattack? So, I mean, that was brilliant display by Wolf in particular in that game. And so, tactically, they understand the tactics that it will take because we did it in that match. So why can we not adopt that at home? I'm going to say, we've talked about it 100 million times, it's because of the crowd. You can't really sit back and put on that pressure and because the fans won't react to it. And when the fans start reacting, the players react, and then it becomes like a vicious cycle. But again, I'm not blaming the fans. I'm just saying that, you know, counterattack really does... is based on the fact that you're not going to have the ball a lot and you're waiting to set up certain things. It also helps when you have, you know, wide players that can get forward and you know, break quickly, and then the attackers and the supporting players get into the boxes quickly and create goals. But one of our best plays last year was a counter-attack clinic last year at Leicester. I think that if we can do it then, we could probably adapt it somewhat to our home matches.
I think you're right. But and when you talk about the fans making it difficult, I think it's particularly prevalent. Again, I'm also not criticising fans. I think any club has the same situation. If you're playing a team where you have at least some expectation of getting a result, your team goes out and sits off and doesn't look to have possession of the ball other than when you're attacking, yeah, your fans will get anxious, and then that anxiety will then turn to irritation. And then by the end of the game, particularly if you don't win it, it will turn to anger, and very quickly the whole support turns against the manager. So it's a very, very difficult thing to do at home, and many clubs have that exact same struggle. And I also think football has changed to some level. It's more than just Palace who do struggle with that particular situation of trying to break teams down. And you think about how we do it to our opponents when we go away from home. You think about how we've played against Man City at times, how we approach games against Liverpool and Man United. And we do exactly the same thing. I think we lose 1-0 to Tottenham every time we play them for that exact reason, that we're not particularly ambitious. And we end up just conceding that one goal without really creating anything. But they struggle to break us down because we are organised. So I understand all of that, but I don't think we can go through another season where our home form is at that level without doing something different. And last year, it drove me mad that we didn't try, anything different. Even when the season was done, we didn't actually try anything different. And the real peak of my irritation was beating Man City and then 0-0 to Cardiff. The 0-0 against Cardiff after that win, it made me want to just poke my eyes out with a spoon. Perhaps not literally, but... yeah, drove me absolutely mad. So that's my concern perhaps going into the season with Roy. The other thing that slightly bothered me about Roy was, and I think he's making a different point here, so I feel a little bit mean to pick on this, but when he was talking about the squad, he talked about having to have Woods and Dreyer involved. And he's said similar comments about young players before. And I just wonder, should he be a bit more mindful about his words and how are you going to get... First of all, how will Sam Woods and Luke Dreyer feel about being told that, you know, they're only on the bench because he has to put them on the bench? It doesn't really encourage them, in my view, although I don't know what he says to them privately. And similarly, he should really be a bit mindful of that and think about how on earth they're going to get the Premier League experience he says they're missing if he doesn't play them. So a couple of bits in there, Dion.
He doesn't see the youth as like part of the team. I honestly think that, because like, even when discussing fullbacks, he didn't mention Mitchell. He just said there's one right back and one left back, and Mitchell performed. But then again, I have to say, I was going to say at the start of the show, in this preseason, no one's really stood out for me. Like, you see the Barnet game where there was lots of youth players playing, for example. No one's taking the opportunities. And going into next season, I just want everyone to kind of relax with the youth, because they did get some of their chance in preseason. Maybe not exactly with the first team, but they did show Roy what they can do, and it was a match. So, yeah, let's just relax on the youth side of things going into next season, because right now they've shown that they can't really perform at the highest stage, really.
Not having it at all. Sorry. I watched James Daly in the Wimbledon match. I watched him in training. When Roy himself said, "Great job, James. Good job, James." I watched Brandon Pierrick in the AFC Wimbledon game. Kid 17 years old, played brilliantly. 17 scored two goals.
Apart from him.
Let me finish. So my point is, I know you say, relax with the youth, but I'm with you. He doesn't seem to give the youth a chance, but he needs to. He needs to say, get out of that mindset that they're not good enough. James Daly brings energy. He's two-footed. He puts himself about. I don't think he's going to go out alone. He's always going to play, but I think you give him a chance. Brandon Pierrick is very young, obviously. Probably shouldn't be given a chance, but you know what? What would it hurt to give him a chance every once in a while? I'm not all for that. And you, but Riley Mitchell, but I think Tyree Mitchell got hurt after that first or second game, so he's not even available. I liked the look of him when I saw him in the game and a half I saw him in. So I think we need to give him a chance. And I think that, like you just said, he's not going to, because he's really setting his ways away. And I think that's a real shame that, again, the one player that was given a chance, albeit because Joel Ward was injured and he fell over himself, was Wan-Bissaka. And we ended up selling him a year and a half later. But no, I think we should give more youth a chance. And if it's not going to be Kirby or Dreyer or Woods, then give Pierrick or give Daly a chance. Because you know what? You never know. You might trip over another Wan-Bissaka without even knowing it.
I think right now it's just, I'm not too sure about Woods, but it'll be, in my opinion, if you were to give a chance, it'll be Dreyer, Mitchell, Kirby. Mm-hmm. That's it, really. But other than that, the rest of they haven't shown anything. There's no point.
So I've turned you around already. You went from nobody. You just named three players.
he's got three now, yeah.
No. Like, Mitchell, there's talent there. But in terms of, like, being outstanding, I know he was injured. But Dreyer, for example, no one really stood out in preseason. I can't point a finger and be like, Luke Dreyer was the man in preseason.
Very few first teamers did either, but let's not dwell too much more on that. And I'm very conscious. We've just talked about Roy, and I've brought up some negatives. I do want to mention a couple of things that I'm positive about, and that'll take us into our last section of the show as well. I am, as much as I have reservations about some of the things that Roy does and how he goes about things, I remain satisfied that he's our manager. That sounds a bit mean. I think he is, he is a good manager to have in the position that we're in. I think if anyone's going to keep us competitive in the majority of games, it's Roy Hodgson. His experience, his knowledge is unrivaled. And I think we could be a hell of a lot worse off than we are right now, having Roy Hodgson in charge. So I want to give him props for the job he's done at Palace so far. And I really hope that frustration he's had over the lack of transfer activities is resolved fairly soon, and we can start being a bit more positive.
I want to add also, Chris, is that I give him credit. He didn't play Guaita and Maya last year as much as I wanted to, but you can definitely tell that they've embedded themselves into the side. If you guys watch any of the videos, but Guaita speaks a lot more English now, very integrated into the side, and you know he's going to be starting keeper from the first game and won't come out barring injury. And Maya definitely will be playing a lot more so. Though Roy is a little bit stuck in his ways, give him credit that now that those two have embedded themselves as far as the culture and the Premier League, they will play. And I think those two players can make a huge difference to our season this year.
Definitely. And moving on to more positives. I'd be honest, I started writing this section and I failed quite quickly. So I'm hoping that Patrick and DR have got some. I've said, obviously, one of the big positives is we're extending our record spell in the top flight. And I know people get very moany very quickly when you start pointing out how far we've come since 2009-10 season, where we nearly went out of existence. Apparently, you're not allowed to mention that. You're not allowed to mention any kind of perspective or anything like that. So fine, I won't. But we are still, in terms of consistency in the top division, we're in our best ever. We're making history. Every season, we're making history. And that really shouldn't get lost. Similarly, if you were made either a managing director or chairman of a company, and you took that company company's turnover and increase it by 10 times over nine years, you would be have considered to have worked miracles. Yet we're seeing a hashtag perish out. And I think that also gets missed quite a lot in all the frustration. And I'm not saying that there's not a reason to be frustrated at times. And I'm not saying that every decision that's made is correct. I'm just saying if you take a step back and look at it, take the emotion out of it, you'll realise that as a football club, we are far, far better off than we have been for a very, very long time. And we should be very proud of that and very appreciative of that, in my view. So those are some of my positives.
I agree with you, but the downside, I think the reason why people have become so moany about like the situation is because you see clubs like Wolves coming into the Premier League and straight away going to Europa League. You see West Ham, they've had, you know, they had that season under Bilic where they finished sixth, I think. Newcastle under Benitez, they were decent. Leicester, of course, winning the league. Everton. It's like we've stayed at the same position. Ooh. And they've pushed on.
All much bigger clubs than us. You've named loads of clubs.
I mean,
much bigger than
clubs.
Us.
They're so much bigger than we are.
Yeah, but I feel like that's the thing. It's like we're just stuck there and them clubs. So who's on our level? So Brighton. Well, Norwich.
Brighton.
Norwich.
Norwich. But you know what I mean? But no, I understand the point you're making, Dylan, and that's where people get stuck in the whole, well, if we accept that, then we're not showing ambition. And there's definitely a point to be made there. But to change that, takes serious time. You know, we're one of a huge number of clubs in London where, you know, whereas teams like Newcastle, they're a massive city with one club.
I understand that.
You know, so we don't have, you know, look how long it's taken for anything to happen at the stadium, and it's still not happening. We desperately need to operate in the Premier League. As much as it's a distasteful thing for a lot of supporters, you need superb corporate facilities and a much bigger ground, because you need to generate much more income to be able to spend more money as part of financial fair play. But people don't have the patience for that. They want it all at the same time. They want us to develop the stadium, have a top class youth academy, have huge sums of money to spend in the transfer window, and a bottomless pit for wages. And they want all of that all at the same time, and they're not prepared to wait for it. So what do you do?
I agree with everything that you're saying, but it's like, that's what people don't see. That's why it has become so toxic, because people look at them clubs that I've listed and they're like, look what they're doing. Like Moise Kean, he signed for Everton, and people are looking at that at Palace and they're like, look, we can't sign anyone. And that's what it is, really. It's the fact that we're looking at other clubs and we're seeing where they are. And I feel like over the years, that's just building up more frustration, because it seems like we're at the same position. But I understand what you're saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, all I'm saying is that's what people look at, and that's why it's become more toxic by the year, because it seems like we're just stuck.
I would love to be Wolves. I really would. I threw the joke out there that they'd probably end up winning Europa League and going Champions next year. They've been in the league for, you know, a season and a bit, but you have to look at the history of that club. They're a much bigger club. Newcastle, a bigger club than us. So I want to go back to what Chris is saying about, you know, people want to make fun and make light of. And again, I'm not a yes man. I'm not a, you know, whatever. But you have to look at Palace's history. And I go back way back. So I'm looking at now at the history of our club. We were in the first division 69-70, 70-71, 71-72, 72-73. We got relegated that year. We went down Division 2, then down Division 3. When you fall out of the division, you can fall faster than Crystal Palace. It's happened in our history. This is the longest streak we've ever been in top flight. We're in the best position we've ever been. Of course I want to win. I want to win more than anybody. I had that whole soliloquy about being at, you know, Wembley and wanting us to win a cup. I want to win badly, but you got to understand we're Crystal Palace. And Chris makes a great point. We're Crystal Palace, one of many, many Premier League clubs, and we're fighting for the same pound, the same player that other teams are, and they're going to choose. Moise Kean is going to choose a bigger Everton over us. He's just going to, because Everton has a better history. I mean, Everton's won FA Cups. They've won, you know, they won the first division when it was the first division back then. You know, they're a bigger club. So yeah, I want us to push on. I want us to push us in the worst way, but there are things that are getting in our way. One is not having a manager for more than two seasons. Two, transfer business has always been poorly planned and poorly executed. Three, getting an American investor in who one point spends money and decides, you know what, I'm going to pull out and I'm going to, you know, put that on hold. Three, getting, you know, players injured at key times and not being able to push on, and having our best player and one out wanting to leave and our best young player getting sold to a top club. It's difficult, But I still am very appreciative of how, of where we are in our history. And I think that if we can hang in there for another year and we get that new stand starting to get built and we get new investors in, perhaps we can push on. But again, a lot of stuff is on ourselves because of the fact that we just do not do things correctly. And this transfer window thing has to get fixed because it's an easy stick to beat us with. It just is.
It is. And you know, as we talked about before the show, that's where we don't help ourselves. And I think, as we were talking about earlier, for me, there's going to be so many reasons that we're not really party to or aware of as to why it keeps happening the way it keeps happening. And it's one of those things where it might take a change of ownership for that to change. But you've also got to remember that you can get stuck in the mindset that doing something differently will always have a positive outcome if what you perceive currently is negative. So if you perceive our current situation as negative, you automatically think, well, do something different and then it'll be better. You can do something different and it'll be considerably worse. And there are so many clubs fighting to be in a position that we're in. And if you want perspective, go and look at what's happening at Bolton and Bury at the moment. Think about a little Bolton we're in the Premier League for. Just Adrian ages, and now they can't. Now they think they've got...
Really?
Exactly. They've got three contracted players at the moment going into the season. Awful, awful stuff. And they were... Yeah. They were owned by a lifelong fan who was just bankrolling them continuously and eventually just came to a point, to a point and couldn't fund it anymore. Weird.
Worrying.
So, yeah, look, this is what, you know, this is the positive section, and that's what we're saying. And the best we're coming up with at the moment is perspective. but it shouldn't be ignored, all right? It should not be ignored. Anything else for anyone else?
Yeah, let me just say, we've got Max Meyer, who seems like Roy going to give him a chance. He's now under us for another year, so that's a positive. It seems like Wilf is staying. There's continuity with the squad. We have Roy Hodgson, who's a manager, who will be able to keep us up. So there are positives there. And yeah, I'm trying to remain positive going into the Everton game, but it's very hard when look at other clubs. But yeah, there are some positives there. It's not like it's the end of the world. I think we'll make some more transfers and we'll be fine before the start of the season.
Well, let's hope so. And we've also got another question from a listener coming up. So let's hear that now.
Hello, this is Jason from America. And my question for you guys is, do you think Benteke, if he can stay fit all year, score 15 or so goals like he did in his first year with the club?
So, Patrick, you speak the lingo. I don't know if you want to take that one.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
I'm mindful of the fact that he scored those 15 goals, and I'm a big Benteke fan, under a different system, different manager. I was very hopeful with the goal he scored when Luka in the Bristol City goal, because Luka was putting in balls similar to the one he put in against Brighton that Wilf scored on. So if we can play to Benteke's strengths, I really believe that once he gets a couple of goals early in the season, his confidence will get up and he'll be able to score. I'm just worried about the way that we play may inhibit him. But I think, Jason, you're right. I think that he can get the 15 goals and they can push on for us this year.
Yeah, I don't know. If the question is, do I think he will? My gut feeling is no. For the reason Patrick suggested, that we don't play in that way. If at some point this season we decide to regularly put crosses in the box for him and he adjusts to that, because he's obviously had to adjust to the fact that that's not been happening and play differently, and do a different job under Hodgson. But my gut feeling is always that Benteke at Palace is now, we've seen him at his best, and now it's just a case of him trying to do the best job he can until he leaves. I mean, that's a horribly negative thing to say, but I just think, you can see it when he's snatching at chances and you know, missing easy opportunities. And I think more importantly, we're still a fan base that wants a striker to just run themselves into the ground. And that's why I'm quite happy about Ayew, because I think people will get over the fact that he doesn't score a huge amount of goals just through that work rate. It happened quite a lot last season where he started to win quite a few people over, myself included, but just the sheer graft. And I think the way Benteke plays, he doesn't really ever appear to be grafted. And that's not going to change over the course of the next year. But it's a great question, Jason. And I hope he does. I hope next season he gets the more goals than he's ever got for Palace, but whether it will happen, I have to say I don't think so. So if you, like Jason, throughout the course of this season, want to get in touch with us and leave us a voice message, chuck in your phone contacts 0203 575 1266. Add us on WhatsApp and then send us your voice messages and we'll use them on the show like we did today. And I'm hoping that'll be nice and popular throughout the course of the year. Desperate to hear from you, you all this season. Obviously, when we were a live show way back when under a different name, got constant contact from listeners and we love all your tweets and your messages and your emails. Email address is hi@backofthenest.com, by the way. But obviously, it's very difficult to get through all of those and put them into a structured show every single week. So voice messages is just another way you can get in touch and also means it can actually feature in the show as a bit of content. So hope you enjoyed that. So anyway, let's end it there in terms of we ended it on some positives and obviously exciting year ahead, we hope. I don't doubt by the time we kick off against Everton, we would see some fairly extensive business in the transfer window. If not, I think we could be in for a very, very difficult season. But, you know, we like to leave it late. We like to keep people on their toes. So my thanks to DR and Patrick for being on the panel today and to Mikey for producing and, of course, all of you for listening and getting involved. Thanks very much. Bye.
All right, I'll stop shirking it now.
All right, DR, well, thanks for that. I can get with intro now, can't I? So appreciated. Hello, I just realised that me saying that makes it sound like DR was stroking me. Let's make it clear. DR was not stroking me in any sense of the word.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.